so glad of military boots and thick camo trousers. "Food!" Confessor Pitt shouted. The last truck carried barrels of slop. The gallons queued as the cooks handed out stamped metal bowls of hot, thick broth. Carkle stood in a circle with some of his brothers in the lee of a half-track. They shoveled the food in before it went cold, then handed the bowls back for others. "Gather round," Confessor Pitt called out. The stitches that held his eyelids open were pulling. Drips of blood marked his cheeks, and icicles hung from his nose into his beard. The wind whipped under the chassis, tugging at their legs. He stared at each of them. "The Imperium of Man has languished for too long in the hands of the unholy. The bell tolls for its myriad sins. Even now, the enemies of mankind knock at the door of our home worlds. Those without faith turn to heresy. The open mind is easily corrupted. Our minds are shut. Our faith is strong. We deny their false proofs, for we are the few. We are the holy. We are the spark that starts the conflagration." Confessor Pitt's breath steamed in the air before him. "We of the Temple of the Holy Emperor are the Emperor's truth. You are the foot soldiers who shall restore his power to the Imperium of Man. We shall cast down the unholy who despoil his throne world. We shall burn the unrighteous and the unbelievers. You," he said suddenly. Carkle realised he was being singled out. "What do you believe?" Carkle felt both terror and elation. He shouted out his creed. "I believe in the one true emperor. I believe in his holy church and the right of his brotherhood to be his strong right arm." The confessor's staring eyes fixed on the next man. "Brother, what do you believe?" The man repeated the same lines. The third was stiff with cold. "I," he started, teeth chattering. "I... Confessor Pitt shoved the gallants aside. "Tell me what you believe." The other man's back teeth were rattling so hard he could barely speak. "Do you have faith?" the confessor demanded. "Speak through your courage. Speak through your faith." The other man tried, but as the confessor came forward, the man dropped his las rifle. Confessor Pitt looked down on him with sudden disgust. "Do you refuse to fight?"
No,
the man said, and fell onto his knees, claw hands desperately trying to pick up his gun. The confessor stood over him, staring down, eyes twitching as his lids strained against the stitches. He turned to the rest of the company.
"Brothers, we have one among us whose faith is weak."
Carkle looked down at the man on the floor. It was the other man from Marquis, Bashin. Bashin reached out for him, and Carkle stepped backwards as Confessor Pitt drew his las pistol.
"There is no place for the weak among us. We are the chosen. We are the future. We are the spark that will ignite the Imperium. You, punish him."
One of the other brothers, a burly man with a stubbled scalp and a scraggly black beard that jutted out from his chin, stepped forward. He lifted his las rifle with both hands and brought the butt down onto Bashin's back. Pitt called on each of them to strike a blow. A second stamped on a frozen claw of a hand. A third brought the heel of his boot down onto the man's forearm. There was a distinct crack as the bone sheared in two and the man groaned.
"I believe,"
Bashin started, as if the pain had shocked his frozen mind back into function.
"I believe in the one true emperor."
There was a grunt of pain. The man fell onto his face.
I believe in his holy church."
Another blow fell. When the man spoke again, his voice was barely a whisper.
"And the right of the Fratiris militia to be his strong right arm."
Carkle was about to say that he had spoken the words, but the brothers were not listening any more. Confessor Pitt's blood was up. He had found a traitor among their number. Blows rained down on him, rifle butts, fists, feet, knees. A hand took his shoulder. He turned to see the confessor's bloodshot eyes streaming tears of blood.
You alone have yet to strike. Do you fear to kill in the name of the truth?
Karkle remembered throttling the life from others in the darkness of the transport. He shook his head. He shouted again.
I believe in the one true emperor. I believe in his holy church and the right of the Fretiris militia to be his strong right arm.
Confessor Pitt's eyes were disbelieving.
Why do you not strike?
Karkle stammered.
I was recalling my sins. Before I joined the Brotherhood, I was not a bad man, but I did things that I am ashamed of. I sinned.
The confessor put a hand to Karkle's face. His eyes were understanding now.
Who has not sinned? Look about you. Brothers, are any of us sinless? No, they said.
Confessor Pitt put a hand to his own chest.
Am I sinless? No,
came the reply, even stronger than before.
No, we all sin, the confessor said, because we are human. We fail the Holy Emperor every day. But there is one way we can make up for our transgressions. Do you want to know how?
Karkle nodded. His teeth were starting to rattle, and he suddenly feared that he would be next. All he wanted was to live and feed and be warm once more.
The way to salvation is through the blood of unbelievers.
Karkle nodded. He understood this.
Here,
the confessor said, pointing down at the man on the floor.
This is unbelief. One who wanders in darkness. One who is not within the truth.
But he said the words, Karkle started, but the confessor shook his head.
You think he said the words, but you are wrong. He has learnt the words, but he does not believe. Faith would make him strong. Faith would make him resolute. But look at him. He is weak and bloodied. He is close to death, and his soul will wander the void, lost and alone, spurned by the light of the Holy Emperor. Is that what you want for yourself?
No, Karkle declared.
You don't sound sure.
I am sure, Karkle announced. Confessor Pitt's left eye started to twitch.
Then show me. This heretic is guilty. Kill him with a single blow. You can do it. You must do it. For if you don't, then the Emperor spurns your service, and you too are unworthy.
Karkle looked up at the others. They were like wolves standing about a dying beast and looking to see if the guard dog will fight them or not. He turned his gaze down. Bashin was pushing himself up to his knees. He held one limp arm to his body. His nose was broken. One eye was swollen shut. Blood streamed from both nostrils and from a cut in his hairline. The ice beneath him was freckled with red. His blood had frozen.
Forgive me,
Bashan begged.
I believe in the right of the Fretiris militia to be his strong right arm. I walk in truth.
Confessor Pitt's voice was close to Karkle's ear now.
Kill him, it hissed.
Karkle lifted his las rifle.
You are a heretic, he shouted, and I cast you into the darkness of the void, away from the light of the Holy Emperor.
He closed his eyes, drove the rifle butt down, and heard the sound of a human skull breaking. Chapter 15. The barracks were quiet and empty, rooms unlit. Minka called out Laptev's name. Her voice echoed back as she pushed through the rows of empty bunks. She called his name out again. The men's barracks had a distinct smell, sweat mixed in with the scent of leather boots, damp socks, waxcloth webbing, mouldy, wet mops. She got to the end of the wing and turned back. Laptev was nowhere. She could hear her own footsteps, could hear her own breath. There was a distant gurgle of pipes from the floor above. Something was odd. She waited until the distant gurgling stopped and listened. There were 20 bunks, backpacks, boots, dress uniforms laid out on cots, a faded picture of the Kajikades, an icon of Osaka E. Creed pinned high up on the wall, a beret full of old Red Skull's cap badges, the threads showing where they had been cut away. It struck her how the other regiments must feel to be broken up like this. They were like war orphans, taken away from their siblings and assigned to new families. She rested her head on the cool metal of the bunk. She heard a stifled sob and looked about. She could see no one. "Hello?" she called out. The note of the silence changed, as if someone was in there, holding their breath. Minka's skin shivered. She had a terrible feeling that she was back in the dark pits of Markgraf Hive. There was a sound. She moved silently towards the door of the closet. The unknown was always the most terrifying, her mother had told her. Minka had learned that her mother was wrong, because Minka had seen the most bone-chilling sights that the galaxy could offer with her own two eyes. But even so, it took all of her courage to reach out and take hold of the round brass doorknob and pull the door open. Something fell towards her, and she leapt back. It was a broom handle. She cursed herself and was about to shut the door again when she saw boots, legs, bent knees. The sweet smell was overpowering. She pushed the stack of mops and brooms aside. "Laptev, is that you?" There was a slurred response. It was Laptev. He was limp as a dead man, eyes rolled back to the white, snot and drool hanging from his face. She knelt down and slapped his face. "Laptev, what have you done, you stupid bastard?" He gurgled. She slapped him again. She'd known lots of Cadians who'd ended their own lives in the last 2 years. She'd been tempted too, in her darker moments. She pulled him forward, took his head and lifted it. "Laptev," she hissed. She knelt down and slapped his cheek again. "What the freck have you done?" She checked his wrists. No blood. Checked his pulse. Checked his neck. His mouth was clear. His hands were sweaty. She had a sudden fear. What happened if he died? She'd be the sergeant who cursed her squad. Clutched in his left palm was a glass phial. There was a residue of blue syrup inside. She sniffed it. "Oh, freck," she cursed, and punched him in frustration. She knew what she was supposed to do, report him to the bats. But she knew how that would end, his body being dumped in a black bag over the side of the cliff. She cursed him again, put the phial back into his hand, stood up. He spoke. She bent down. "Laptev, say that again." He tried to speak. She shook him. "If I can't hear you, I can't help you." Laptev's eyes blinked open for a moment, and she thought he was coming back.
"Don't shoot me," he mumbled.
She slapped his cheeks. He took her hands in his and held them tight.
"Is that you?"
he asked. His eyes rolled back. The pupils were gaping wide and dark. He blinked.
"Sergeant, is that you?"
"What do you mean?"
"Is that you?"
"Yes, it's me, Sergeant Lesk. What did you take?" There was a long pause, and she thought she would lose him again. At last he rasped.
"Medicine."
"Laptev, what have you taken?" His fingers were like vices on her arms as he hissed.
"The Red Giant. The Bloody Warrior."
Minka felt a wave of horror pass through her. She remembered her own moment of abject terror, and it clutched at her throat. She could not speak.
"Don't let them shoot me,"
he said.
"Not because of the Red Giant. We could not fight it. We could do nothing."
Minka squeezed her eyes shut. She could not go back there. It was too terrifying. She pushed his hands off. Listen, Laptev, this cannot happen again, understand? You are a corporal in the 101st Cadian Shock Troops. That has got to mean something to you. His eyes lost focus. Listen, I've been where you are now. I've been there, and there is a way out. The Emperor forgives. But he needs you to step up. I need it. I want all that you have, understand? No more nonsense. Understand? A shudder went through him, and he lifted a hand in what was probably a salute. When she came back into the mess, the exuberance was reaching a crescendo. Troopers were sitting and standing in groups. She bumped into a figure. Lesk, Commissar Shan said. In a hurry? Yes, she said quickly. Weak bladder. Where are your squad? They're in the yard. They didn't want to intrude on a family occasion, she said, nodding towards where Benedict sat, laughing with the oldest members of the unit. I went out to drink with them. How's Laptev? Don't know, she said. Shan's face was sidelit by the mess lights. It threw his features into hard and dark relief. No? No, sir. Sure? Yes. I need you to watch him closely, Lesk. All the Red Skulls. Do you understand? Minka nodded solemnly. Anything strange, you let me know. She saluted. Yes, sir. Chapter 16. As the Cadian 101st were enjoying the last round of drinks in the Evercity barracks, Captain Ashtari was making an impromptu inspection of the guard compound that surrounded the astropathic tower of Nullum Apek. The base was a doughnut shape of barracks, habs, tower blocks, sentry towers, gun emplacements and perimeter fencing, hung inside and out with a triple row of concertina wire. Inside the girdle, the astropathic tower rose up, dark and foreboding. Ashtari had had no contact with the denizens inside, and that suited him fine. The Barilan mechanised had been on Potence for 6 months now, and this was Ashtari's second posting up to the Supramonte. The cold was not the worst thing. There were warm barracks, half sunken into the frozen earth, a good supply of victuals and good hunting too in the forest when the weather was clear. Last trip he'd bagged 3 mountain tigers and an aurochs. Hunting was not allowed, of course. The whole Supramonte was the preserve of the rich stars, who had stocked it with big game felines. But, so Ashtari had been told, the current Pedrizo had no interest in hunting, and the tigers of the Supramonte had become abundant. He'd go hunting again, Ashtari told himself, just as soon as this snow passed. No, he thought, as he stamped through the half-cleared path to the pillbox in the North Circuit, the worst thing was the tower itself. He gave it a glance. The Nullum Apek was a tall pinnacle of windowless black basalt, stabbing up into the clouds, or, perhaps, raised like a finger in warning. It had the stink of Xenos to it, like something brought forth without human hands, riven from the bedrock in an unholy manner. And this was the worst time of all, as pale, corpuscent witchfire began to play across the pinnacle of the tower, and a thunderhead of psychic power built about its summit. 2 men patrolled each quadrant, their greatcoats fastened tight, their fur-lined shakos pulled low onto their heads. He waved to them as he approached the nearest pillbox. The metalled steps had been scattered with grit and chlorides. He was careful, nonetheless. Last thing he needed was a fall. They hurt twice as much when you were this cold. He put a thickly gloved hand to the iron door clamp. The lock had frozen. He thrust it down with a grunt and bent low to step inside. The rock creep bunker had a ruddy glow from the brazier. The squad inside had made themselves as comfortable as possible, building on the modifications made by each guard unit unlucky enough to spend the winters up here. They sat playing cards on a camp table, while one of them kept watch at the firing slot. They had strung Munitorum issue blankets around the walls, and across the firing slot, a simple curtain of padded cotton had been hung to keep out the drafts. It was like stepping into a nomad tupik. They stood as he entered.
At ease.
He stamped to get the snow from his shoes. So, who's winning?
Bijan, they all said.
Bijan was a short trooper who was still growing his distinctive Barilan moustaches.
Well done, lad. Keep it up,
Ashtari told him. They passed the time with small talk until there was the crackle of an electronic discharge in the air above them.
It's starting again, is it? Bijan asked. How long did it go on for the last time?
A whole watch, at least. The lightning flared again. The sergeant, Abbas, rubbed his hands together.
How long till we're back at the starport?
Good news there. Our stay has been shortened. Apparently there's a new general planetside. He's expecting invasion, wants the garrison at the starport reinforced. The news of invasion didn't cheer any of them.
At least something is going to happen, Abbas said.
Well, carry on, Ashtari said, and made for the door. As he did, there was a crackle of static. Abbas lifted the vox receiver.
Is the captain there? A voice said. It was unmistakably Carvan. Yeah, great. Can you ask him to come to the gate? We've got guests. Just need his clearance.
Ashtari frowned. Guests? He repeated, but Carvan had closed the vox link. There was another crackle of electrostatic power above his head. It was bright enough to throw sudden shadows through the pillbox doorway. Ashtari ducked outside and closed the door behind him, calling out,
Bijan, keep beating those bastards.
There was a light in the darkness that crackled and spat like an angry snake. Karkle's head began to throb. It was like a low drone inside his skull. He put his hands to his ears, but the noise did not go away. Confessor Pitt did not seem to notice. He stood at the front of the carriage and stared ahead. More lightning flashed above their heads. No one dared cry out. The mist cleared as they came closer. Cargill saw a high fence, brightly lit with lumen globes, a rock-crete pillbox, and a stab light pointing straight towards them. A guardsman with a las rifle beckoned them to slow down. The engines idled as an officer in trench coat and fur hat strode out from the command post. He went to the driver's door of the lead vehicle, his breath steaming in the high plateau air, but clearly the driver had pointed him behind to where Confessor Pitt stood erect in the half-track.
We are here in the name of the God Emperor. By appointment of the Pedrizo and the Cardinal Archbishop of the Gallows Cluster, Confessor Pitt shouted.
He reached inside his chest and took out a sheaf of papers. The officer had long moustaches, eyebrows pale with ice, and an ornate sabre slung over his back. He took the papers in a gloved hand and looked at them without speaking. He walked back inside as promethium fumes thickened about the waiting convoy. Ashtari reached the front gate a few minutes after leaving the north pillbox. The guards were up, looking smart. Sergeant Carvan had a roll of parchment on the desk in front of him.
There's a bunch of nutheads outside, he said.
Says they have official sanction to relieve us.
Good luck to them, Ashtari said.
He took the papers. They had the official seal of the Pedrizo.
Looks good to me. Let's get clearance first.
As they waited in the half-track, Karkle could feel his heartbeat quicken. After a minute or two, another officer came forward. He held a piece of paper in his hand.
Who is the commander here?
Confessor Pitt spoke with all the gravitas of a prophet.
I am.
I'm Captain Ashtari, Barilan Guard. Can you come down, please?
Karkle felt a stab of anger. How could anyone question his confessor? The gallants in the back of the half-track stepped aside to let their commander through. As he passed Karkle, the confessor lifted a finger and touched him on the chest.
Come with me, he said.
He picked out 10 guards as he moved through the crush. They jumped down behind him onto the Rockcrete Road and walked to stand before the officer. The officer looked pained.
"Sorry," he said. "Just you, Confessor."
"What is the problem?"
Pitt demanded. "I need to check your credentials." Confessor Pitt's staring eyeballs were full of intent.
"Why?"
"It's my job," the officer said.
"The papers are correct. The seals are authentic. We are warriors of the faith. We have imperial sanction."
Karkel gripped his las rifle. He could not bear his leader to suffer questioning. Others clearly felt the same. The sense of menace was palpable.
"Trust me, I'll be happy to leave this place to you."
"Perhaps we could come inside while we wait," Confessor Pitt suggested,
but there was nothing conciliatory in his manner. Ashtari sighed.
"Sorry, Confessor, that would not be proper. I just need to contact my commanding officers."
Confessor Pitt braced his legs and spoke with authority.
"Captain, you are impeding the will of the Pedrizo of Potence and the Cardinal Archbishop."
There was a sudden clap of thunder above. The waves of psychic energy washed over them. It seemed to reinforce the confessor's voice. Ashtari's temper was beginning to fray.
"Listen, just wait here."
"I'm afraid we cannot do that."
In a single movement, Confessor Pitt drew his las pistol and fired. There was a flash of red light and a puff of bloody mist, and Captain Ashtari slammed back into the snow. The half-tracks surged forward. They slammed the roadblocks aside as the two guardsmen standing close by dropped to their knees and fired. The man next to Karkel was felled instantly. Confessor Pitt was hit in the chest. Karkel screamed with fury, but Pitt did not seem to notice and put his chainsword through the nearest guardsman's torso. Karkel ran to the pillbox door. The guardsman had shut the door but not locked it. He kicked it open and sprayed the inside. Las bolts lit the chamber up. The men inside had dragged the curtain aside and were swinging the autocannon round, but he kept firing until the room was filled with acrid smoke and everyone was dead. The storm muffled the shouting. The gallants stormed the pillboxes and killed all inside. Confessor Pitt marched to the barrack hall. It was standard munitorum issue, set halfway into the ground. A heavy load of snow sagged from its eaves. The windows had been covered over with padded cotton insulation. Three stairs led down to the double doorway. Confessor Pitt threw one doorway open and stepped inside. To the left was a barrack hall, to the right the mess. The evening meal had finished an hour or so before. A trooper was moving round, wiping tables. From the kitchens came the sound of washing up, plates being stacked, men calling out to each other as they looked forward to the end of their shift. An officer stepped out of the latrine.
"Who the hell are you?"
He was still buttoning up his greatcoat as he strode out of the headquarters.
"I am your judge, and I declare you guilty," Confessor Pitt pronounced.
He fired three shots. The gallants swarmed inside, firing and stabbing. The Barrelan guardsmen put up a desperate defence. They barricaded doorways, fired furiously, took a heavy toll on the forces that came against them. Confessor Pitt ordered the inner gates of the girdle fort broken down, so a half-track rammed the wire gateway and left it in shreds. He turned his back on the dying and the screaming and strode towards the base of the tower. He was like a magnet, drawing his gallants after him. A crowd of men followed in his wake. The astropathic tower rose dark and silent before them. He marched up the steps. The door was locked. He reached for the melter bomb that hung at his waist. He holstered his pistol to set the gauge, then slammed it onto the doorway. It was not in Confessor Pitt's nature to take a step backwards, but he stood back now, as the charge went off with a hiss of smoke and then a sudden blinding flash. The The Tower Wardens of Nullum Apek wore ceremonial uniforms embroidered with religious iconography and wards and seals of purity. They were pure in faith, fearless in the face of heresy and corruption. But their role was to enforce purity throughout the astropathic facility and to guard against warp taint or corruption. They wielded ornate bolt pistols, thrice blessed, and silver etched with religious texts, the blunt tips of the stub-nosed bolts each engraved with pentagrams and the Aquila. They responded to the unauthorised intrusion, dashing from the higher chambers down along the corkscrew corridors, calling on each other for information and to put a plan of defence in place. They came across the first intruders on the third level and fired. The wardens were expert warriors, killing two gallants each. But for each gallant they killed, four more took their place. And they were armoured for execution, not a vicious firefight against so many armed intruders. Karkle charged with his finger on full auto. The fusillade of incandescent las bolts strobed the room. They were unaimed, but that did not matter. With him came 20 other brothers, each one firing as wildly as he. Two wardens were hit by stray rounds. A third threw himself down on the ground and fired off three kill shots before Karkle drove his bayonet into the gap between his collarbone and his neck. He felt the grate of the blade on bone and snapped it in his fury as he yanked it free.
"For the Emperor!" he roared,
and drove the broken blade into the groin of the next. The man swung at him with his ceremonial knife and caught him across the face. Karkle felt the sudden splash of hot blood down his neck as he swung the butt of his rifle up and smashed the man's jaw with a satisfying crunch.
"The Emperor protects,"
he spat into the face of the dying man. The warden did not understand. Confusion clouded his eyes as his last rattling breaths left his body. The Brotherhood swept the defenders aside. Confessor Pitt was fearless as he strode ever upwards, raging and calling on the Emperor's protection. As they entered the astropathic antechamber, the climbers paused for a moment before the armoured metal doors. The chamber was vaulted, hung with banners and tapestries of ancient texts. Vox servitors hung from the ceiling in brass songbird cages, nutrient cables plugging each eye socket, Vox grill mouths open in everlasting psalmistry. The astropathic tower's irregular staff had been herded before them, but now they were trapped and had no choice but to fight. Some had armed themselves with clubs and knives. They threw themselves at the intruders. Others hid behind tapestries and porphyry statues of the god Emperor and Saint Ignatio. A number of wardens put up stiff resistance at the doors of the astropathic chamber, but they were hopelessly outnumbered. All they could do was sell their lives. In less than 5 minutes, they were all dead. The gallants dragged the bodies aside and threw themselves at the warded portals. They hammered at them, fired las bolts into the locking mechanism, and finally brought charges up from the Barrowlands barracks. Confessor Pitt's cheeks twitched as he ordered the gallants back. The charges exploded, and as the smoke cleared, they saw the brass doors hanging on broken hinges. From the darkness came the sound of repeated mantras and the disconnected murmur of confused voices. Confessor Pitt wiped his knife on his robe.
"Stay back," he ordered.
He waved his blade at them.
"I will go alone."
He stepped over the engraved threshold of the astropathic chamber. They pressed behind him, but they did not dare pass over the threshold. As soon as Karkle's eyes became accustomed to the murk, he was struck speechless. The astropathic choir rose up in serried tiers of ornate balustrades. The shadows were lit with flickering candles, revealing mouldy pennants, emaciated servitors hanging in brass cages, and rolls of tumbling script. It took a moment for him to appreciate the quiet bustle within the room, which continued despite Confessor Pitt's intrusion. There were data servitors, bondservants, scribes shuttling back and forth between the choir and the scriptorium, crackling encryptors wreathed in corpuscent light, and psychic wardens with psi prods and stun pistols. They all seemed oblivious, but as Confessor Pitt paced into the room, one of the wardens strode forward, his hand raised in warning. "You cannot come here," he said. Confessor Pitt drove the knife into the man's gut and held him as he kept pushing the blade deeper into his innards, only letting go when the warden's legs gave way and he slipped to the floor. Pitt's hand and blade were stained red. He stopped in the middle of a brass hexagram and took in the opulence, the arcane witchery, the appalling nature of this place, and he pulled a vellum parchment from inside his robes. He held it in one hand and let it unravel from his raised arm. The parchment was marked with the Pedrizzo's official seal. Confessor Pitt pointed his bloody knife towards the other wardens.
"I am Harkham Pitt, representative of the Cardinal of the Gallows Cluster in this facility. This is my warrant of authority. Failure to obey my commands will result in death."
From high up in the darkness, an astropath screamed. Part 4. The Emperor will fetch the outcasts from the ends of the world. He will lift you up and make you into a holy army. He will deliver unto you the land that was your father's, and the children of the Emperor will be made more prosperous and more numerous than all the Xenos of the galaxy. From the Song of Hildeborg of Marquis. Chapter 1. It was the quiet hour after sunset, the night before the festival of Saint Ignatio. In the high chambers of the basilica, Zerium looked out through the Gothic windows. Three eunuchs were playing with a ball on the flat roof below him. Rising behind them, into the sky, were distant columns of black smoke. Throughout the day, the fires had drawn steadily closer, like a besieging army. The tent city was aflame. The fact saddened Cardinal Zerium. He drew in a deep breath and asked,
"Is all ready for tomorrow?"
Vettor nodded.
"Yes, I think so."
Cardinal Zerium nodded.
"You have worked tirelessly."
"I am only doing my duty," Vettor said.
He sat down on one of the stools in the corner of the room. He looked exhausted, and after a moment he yawned loudly.
"Sorry, Your Holiness."
"No, it is time we rested.
Go, sleep. I am going to pray for a while and ask the Emperor for his guidance."
2 hours before dawn, Vettor made his way down through the inhabited parts of the basilica, a hooded lumen in his outstretched hand. He knew many of the hidden paths through the ancient palace, and his footsteps led him past old guard chambers, barracks, mess halls and armories, through the old serving levels, where dust lay thick on old cauldrons, cold hearths and forgotten brewhouses. His footsteps were quiet as he descended the ancient steps, so worn by long dead feet that in some places the stairs were more like a bumpy slide. It took him an hour to reach the place he was looking for, the cistern of Antonio. Vettor's lumen cast enough light to hint at the space before him. A large, square chamber, the massive weight of the palace above them held up by brick archways and rows of heavy marble columns. The darkness was cool and wet. From the distance came the sound of dripping. The water before him was still, a dark mirror that reflected Vettor as he found the coracle that was hidden in a niche. It took a moment for the Ordinand to settle himself in the unsteady craft. He rowed himself across the cistern, finding the opening in the opposite wall. He stowed the coracle and lifted himself up into the rough-hewn tunnel. The ground was less even now. It seemed like an age of endless steps going down. He paused a couple of times to check his direction, and at last he found the place he was seeking. Before him was an arched doorway of well-dressed stone. It was armoured. There was no handle or means of opening it.
Vettel put his ear to the door. Then he scratched on it. There was a moment's pause. Then came a brief flicker as a spy hole was opened. Vettel held his breath, and then the door was opened from the inside. It was the Pedrizzo. He wore a painting apron and showed no signs of weariness despite the early hour.
"Ordinand," he said simply, wiping his fingers clean with a cloth.
"Greetings, my lord," Vettel said. "I trust I have not pulled you from your bed."
"No, indeed not. How can I sleep on a night like this? Even when I was a child, my father would have me stay up all night in readiness for the saint."
Vettel made a non-committal gesture. "We have been very assiduous in our preparations. The cardinal has been praying. I think he fears that he will make some blunder."
"I trust not," the Pedrizzo said.
"I will intervene, if necessary."
"Good," the Pedrizzo said. "That makes me feel better. Shouldn't you be with him now?"
Vettel nodded. "I am sure that you have seen the flames."
"We did not have enough enforcers to govern the tent city as well. Charlier is cleaning out the gangs."
Vettel nodded. "Do you trust him?"
"Of course. He is a rich star as well, you know. Not legitimate, of course. But the bringer of news has always been a position that is held by a minor line."
"You mean a bastard?"
"A crude term, but yes, a bastard. But he is a useful bastard, nonetheless."
"A tool?"
"Aren't we all tools of the God Emperor?"
Vettel paused to consider the question and all its implications. "Yes," he said at last, "I think we are." At last the Pedrizzo said,
"I am fearful."
"Would you like me to hear your confession?"
"No, not now."
They sat together for a long time as the Pedrizzo recounted all the events from the Calvert. "It seems that all is in order," Vettel said at last.
"I trust so. I am fearful, yes, but excited too. This is a new dawn about to shine out over our Imperium, and to think it shall start here on Potence."
Vettel drew in a deep breath. "It is a great moment. I should return to the Cardinal. Steel yourself, Pedrizzo. Much will be demanded of us all. These are days of great import. We are returning our planet to the faith of our forefathers." Chapter 2 It was the morning of the Feast of Saint Ignazio. While the Ever City had a refined, holy air, from the tent city rose the stink of war and fear and desperation. Rudgard Howe had doubled the guards on the city gateways and had issued strict orders that no influxes should be allowed to enter. But the truth was, he did not have enough enforcers to keep influxes out, as well as deal with all the malcontents that he had locked up in the reformatory. There was only so much he could do. All this Chief Enforcer Rudgard Howe understood intuitively as his bike wound up from the enforcer compound, nicknamed the Mouse Hole, in the lower reaches of the Evercity. He passed the neighbourhood bakeries, morning recaf carts, slot bars and street statues, which had been garlanded with flowers and laurels for the saint's feast day. Desperation drove good people to do evil. And evil was something that Rudgard Howe knew all about. The depravities that humans descended to were his trade. The only thing he'd found that kept desperate people honest was hope. And hope was what the Feast of Saint Ignazio supplied. If Rudgard Howe had his way, the Feast of Saint Ignazio would never come, but would always be tomorrow. Hope would never be disappointed. The fact the festival was today filled him with trepidation. It made him ride faster than normal, dangerous with the crowds who were gathering in prayer and to prepare their local saints for the procession to the service. The people stood back to let him pass. They knew the Pedrizzo's chief enforcer by the approaching roar of his bike's engine.
his black visored helmet and double wide reinforced tyres, and he liked the looks of fear they gave him. He swung round the switchbacks, accelerating fast up the straights and kicking the throttle back once he was in the upper reaches of the Evercity. Enforcer checkpoints waved him through. The city was already starting to move as he approached the gates of the Calvert. He slowed, swung through the gateway, and gave the Calibaneer a brief nod. Chantal looked as though he had not slept. He hurried forward as Rudgard pivoted the bike to a halt, kicked the stand down, and swung a leg over the back.
"Where is he?" Rudgard said.
He didn't bother with pleasantries.
"The Pedrizo?"
"Yes, the frecking Pedrizo. Who do you think?"
Chantal shot him a poisonous look, but led the chief enforcer into the palace. The Pedrizo was in the Contemplatorium. An icon of Saint Ignazio stood on a stand in the centre. A palette of oil paints lay on the floor next to it. It looked as though he hadn't painted for a day at least. The paints were starting to scab and crack as they dried out.
"What do you want?" the Pedrizo snapped.
Rudgard picked a sugared crab apple from a bowl on the Pedrizo's table. He threw it into his mouth and crunched through the crisp coating, then reached for another. He said,
"I want to know what the hell Shalia is up to."
"He is restoring order."
"I don't trust him."
Howe took another sugared crab apple. The Pedrizo watched him eat with displeasure. Rudgard lifted the silver lid of the red wine carafe and sniffed the wine.
"You should have let me raise an army. I would have sorted the gangers out long ago."
Rudgard popped another crab apple into his open maw. His teeth had long since been replaced with sharpened steel caps. They made swift work of the delicacies on the Pedrizo's table. He gave the Pedrizo a long, hard look.
"Don't think I'm blind to what you rich stars get up to."
"I'm afraid I have no idea what you're talking about."
"No? Well, I'm sure it would be interesting to those Astra Militarum officers you've just landed."
"Is that a threat?"
Howe smiled. It was not a pleasant sight.
"I don't threaten."
The Pedrizo nodded. Howe was unbearable at times, but he was merciless and effective. Just the kind of man you wanted keeping the masses down. The Contemplatorium's ornate ironwood shutters had been thrown back, and dawn sunlight streamed into the bust gallery. The Pedrizo turned to the dawn gallery that led off to the side. Busts of his forebears stood on pedestals on either side of the mosaic flooring. He stopped and looked out towards the brick wall. A black smoke plume, dissipating in the high atmosphere, stained the sky.
"My father never came here much. He was not one for contemplation. It was shut up when I was a child. I remember sneaking inside when all these were covered with sheets, the treasures that moulded here. There were icons, ancient robes, suits of archaic armour, and these, the collected faces of my ancestors."
He stopped before a severe-looking face.
"This is Festuca. He was ineffective and effete."
Of a bearded and heavy-browed bust, he said,
"Elijah was a warrior without a war to fight. His son, Rasenia, waited for 200 years to take the high seat. He only lasted 50 years, his reign notable only for the depths of his depravity. This is my father, Buthona. My mother, Benaza, was never happy here. She liked the bustle of her home world. My father despaired of me. He did not think I would make a good leader. He thought I was too bookish. I do not think I make a good leader, to be honest, but I have the right men serving me. You, Chantal, Shalia, you are all good men. Good at your jobs, I mean."
The Pedrizo turned his back on the marble images of his forebears.
"I never wanted to be like any of them. I wanted to be a holy man who led by example, who showed the people what it meant to be devout.
Sometimes I fear that I have thought too much. I have spent too long worshipping the God Emperor through my art. Who knew what unhappy times would come in my days? The Imperium of Man trembling to its very foundations. The gallows cluster thrown into the forefront of the heretic attack. If I had known that such would come to pass, I would have spent my life in training, in fighting, in building up armies that could throw the enemy back, in turning our planets into fortresses, into bastions upon which the arch-enemy would break like waves upon the headland. But I did not. I failed us all. I spent my time in painting and contemplation. I am unable to lead the armies as I should have done. Charlia has shown us the way. It is little and late, but at least he has shown us what the rich stars can do. Chapter 3. The Saints' Feast was celebrated in the Grotto Chapel of St. Ignazio, an arcane structure dug into the stone of the Acropolis. One legend had it that the cave was where the saint sheltered from Zeno's ambush. Another said it was where he had been carried when he was dying. Either way, the cave had been smoothed out, widened and deepened, and a nave of stone had been built out from the cliff face to enclose the whole space into a chapel. The structure had a classical facade, with narrow leaded windows of stained glass. Religious attendants were already at work, sweeping the street, setting chairs in neat rows, lighting consecrated tapers. Among them, General Dominka's mountain infantry stood guard. They looked nervous as they set up barricades to keep the people back. They were expecting trouble from the gangers. They had strict orders to keep anyone with ganger tattoos out. Facial tattoos, arms, the lot, their officers told them. The troopers nodded. Before them, it seemed that the square had never looked so clean. The hab blocks that made up the borders had been washed and painted and hung with religious pennants. Throughout the city, the people prepared saint cakes with meat and raisins and off-world spices. There would be great feasts once the church service was over. In the intake barracks, Minka woke early. She felt groggy after the previous night's indulgences, threw herself out of bed and found an empty sink and splashed water on her face. The barracks had a slightly subdued air, typical after a rough night. As she moved out into the drill yard, Dido's squad were standing in number one dress, putting the finishing touches to their uniform. "We're going to the chapel," Dido said, as she gave her right boot a final buff. "We're on a guard for General Benedict at the festival. Women are not allowed inside the chapel, so Sparker picked me. I think it's his idea of a joke." Minka forced a smile. "Say a prayer for me." Dido's squad were standing smartly to attention when General Benedict came out and stepped up into the idling salamander. If he noticed Dido's squad, then he did not say anything immediately, but after a moment he took a second look. "Is that you, Sergeant?" He paused for a moment, searching for the name. "Dido?" She saluted. "Yes, sir. Good to see you. Likewise, sir. We thought you were going on and up to better things." Benedict forced a laugh. "High command is not all it's cracked up to be. I see you lost your hand, sir." "Yes," Benedict said. He held his stump up ruefully. "Forgive me, sir. I heard you were protecting our honour. The Cadians, I mean. I just want to let you know that we appreciate your courage." Benedict nodded as Mia signalled the driver to move forward. "Thank you, Sergeant. It means a lot." Cardinal Zerium tried to calm himself as he looked at the items that Rovas had laid out for him. There was a robe, some boots, an ivory staff, and the golden death mask of St. Ignazio. He paced up and down, and the dark, hollow eyes of the mask seemed to follow him across the room. In his time within the ecclesiarchy,
He'd been asked to pass judgment on the blasphemous nature of many festivals and practices peculiar to their own particular planet, and compared to cannibalism and child sacrifice, the donning of a death mask seemed rather mundane. But there was something unsettling about assuming the face of a long-dead warrior. He rang the bell for Rovas, but his valet did not come. Zerium cursed. He could not wait any longer. He put the ceremonial boots on. The robe was the kind of costume that buttoned up the back and required staff to dress him in. But Veto had not been seen all morning, and Zerium was beginning to become concerned. Portence was a city ill at ease with itself, and the influxes had strained the peace to its limits. It would be typical for his ordinand to go missing on this, the very morning when Zerium needed his guidance the most. The noises of the festival, cheers, chanting, singing, the ringing of many bells, filled him not so much with a religious thrill, but a growing sense that something ominous was going to happen. Cardinal Zerium pulled the robe over his head and settled the shoulders into place. There was a brief scratch on the door.
"Ah, Rovas, at last I was beginning to worry. Where have you been?"
But it was not Rovas, it was Veto. The young man walked calmly to the windowsill.
"Are you ready, Cardinal?"
"No," Zerium snapped. "I am not, and I am not ready for guests."
But as he spoke, he saw Veto draw something from under his robes.
"What are you doing?"
Veto's narrow face was intent. "This is a pistol, Cardinal, and I declare you heretic. In fact, you are the worst kind of heretic, a man who thinks he does good, while all along he serves the forces of the enemy."
Zerium stared in astonishment. "What are you talking about?"
"You know what I am talking about," Veto said, stepping forward, pistol still held in his fist. Zerium stepped behind an ornate chair. He rested his hands on its velvet back.
"I do not," he said,
then shouted,
"Rovas, help!"
There was no sound. Nothing. "Rovas is dead." Veto stepped sideways to get a good angle for a shot. "I killed him. He was also a heretic. All who do not believe are heretics, and they shall burn." Zerium held out both hands as if he wanted to pacify a crowd.
"I am Cardinal Zerium of the Ecclesiarchy, Veto. I fear for your sanity."
Veto fired. The poison dart quivered in the back of the chair.
"Oh, I am sane," he said, and flipped a fresh needle into his gun. The sharp end dripped toxins. "This is the moment we have all waited for, when the gallows cluster will rise up and overthrow the corrupt and the unholy."
Cardinal Zerium put up a hand.
"Ordinand Veto, I command you to put down your gun. Killing a member of the Ecclesiarchy is a grave sin. The Emperor will not forgive such a transgression. Your soul will burn in the plasma flames of infamy."
Veto smiled. "I am a member of the Temple Church, the Keepers of the Faith, an unbroken line back to the earliest days of the Imperium of Man."
"You cannot believe that heretical nonsense."
Veto smiled broadly now.
"Oh, but I do. And I think you will find that most people on this planet do as well."
The sounds of feet and shouting were coming up from below. Zerium knew if he could just delay Veto, he might hold him off until help came.
"I know the blasphemous creed of the Templars, but think, the Emperor showed his displeasure in the storm of the Emperor's wrath. What could be a clearer manifestation of the divine will?"
Veto did not put the gun down, but he seemed caught.
"How many warp craft disappear each year?" "Hundreds. Thousands."
"Yes, and do we see the will of the Emperor within their loss? The storm of the Emperor's wrath was an accident, nothing more," Veto said. "A chance for the Emperor to test our faith. In the gallows cluster, we remained loyal and true. We have not forgotten." Zerium stopped behind his high, winged chair.
Vettor, this is heresy. What about Goge van Deer and his sins?
There were no sins.
What about the murders, the heresy, the despoiling of holy terror?
Lies, Vettor said. It was a simple fact. He stepped forward. Falsehoods. Heresy.
But, Zerium said.
Vettor fired once more. This time the dart went over Zerium's shoulder and embedded itself in the plaster. Vettor seemed to be enjoying himself.
Look about you, Cardinal Zerium. Your Imperium hangs by a thread. We know what they do not.
You are right. The Emperor's will is clear. In his wisdom, he has allowed the Cadian Gate to fall. He has allowed the Cicatrix Maledictum to divide the damned from those who might yet be saved. Your Imperium is a heresy. From the Gallows Cluster, a new Imperium of mankind shall arise, stronger in faith, fearless in endeavour, defiant of our enemies.
Footsteps were running along the corridor. Zerium fell to the floor as Vettor fired once more.
The dart went straight over his head, and he crawled behind the desk as the door flew open. Shalia Starborn burst in. The Cardinal put his hand to his heart in gratitude.
Shalia, I am glad to see you. He's trying to kill me.
The Cardinal pointed at Vettor.
No one moved. He's gone mad, Zerium insisted,
but Shalia still did not move. Zerium looked to the men who were with him. They were not Cadian, nor Calibaneer, or any other force known to Zerium. They were bearded warriors in black gowns and black body armour, marked with the symbol of the Golden Throne.
I am sorry, Shalia said, but we will not take orders from the Ecclesiarchy any more.
He spoke the word Ecclesiarchy with hatred and contempt. Zerium did not understand. It was Vettor who smiled.
Meet your crusaders, the new army of the Imperium.
The Fratiris Militia?
No, the Fratiris Templars.
Vettor, the Cardinal begged, I do not deserve this. I am a good man.
Vettor paused for a moment.
Yes, you are. But goodness is no protection, Cardinal. This is not a test of merit or virtue. This is a matter of doctrinal belief and divine truth, and I condemn you, Zerium, as a heretic.
Vettor spoke matter-of-factly, then nodded towards the men of the Brotherhood.
Kill him.
The warriors smelt of sweat as they surrounded the Cardinal. He pushed himself to his feet, but they knocked him back down.
Oh, Lord Emperor, I am your servant, he called out as he lay on the floor.
Then one by one, the rifle butts fell. Chapter 4 Mia and Bendict stood in the salamander as it drove through the barrack gates and onto the winding road down. There were clear views out over the tent city, towards the distant mountains. After a long silence, Mia said, "Should be easy to defend." Bendict was distracted. He nodded.
"Yes, as long as Archmagos Marquix sorts out the void shields."
"Any word from him?"
Bendict shook his head. His manner stopped Mia asking any more questions.